What does it mean to you and to the film to be at Tribeca?
Uh-oh. That was Adam Sandler. look, this festival means a lot to me because it was created after 9/11, partly as a way to revitalize downtown. To me, they've revitalized all of New York. So a big thanks to Jane Rosenthal and Bob De Niro. This is an important one. It's New York, so I'm very happy to be here at this festival.
For you, what made you want to direct this one?
It was a beautiful script written by Alessandro Camon. The characters were just so well drawn, and I think it's such an important subject matter that I wanted to be involved.
What can you tell us about the film and the plans for the film going forward?
Well, we're here at the festival. We'll see what we'll see what happens after this. But it's a film starring Tessa Thompson. She plays a home helpline worker, and it deals with very important mental health issues that I think we all either struggle with or we know a friend or family member. So I'm very proud of it.
Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby here with part two of our No Rest for the Fest coverage of the Tribeca Film Festival. Now, that clip that you saw at the top of the show, that was none other than Steve Buscemi being photobombed by Richard Gere. Can't get those moments anywhere else, folks. All right, we got a lot of show in store for you, but first, we got some lovely ad reads from our very own Emmeline Pryor.
No Rest for the Weekend's coverage of the Tribeca Film Festival is sponsored by New York Women in Film and Television. NYWIFT congratulates its 15 members with films at Tribeca 2023. NYWIFT.org. Black Magic Design, the world's highest quality products for the feature film, post and broadcast industries. BlackMagicDesign.com. JMR Rentals, professional, digital, cinema and broadcast equipment rentals in Brooklyn, New York. JMRNY.com. And by NYC Webfest. Attention content creators, NYC Webfest is your premier festival for web series and short film. And now use the promo code PODCASTNYC to receive 15% off your first submission. Submit today, nycwebfest.com.
All right, welcome back to our coverage of the Tribeca Film Festival. Later on, I'll be speaking with Sheila Omi, who stars in the new Pixar film Elemental. But first, we've got some interviews from the red carpet, starting with the North American premiere of The Adults, starring Anoop Desai and Michael Cera.
My character in The Adults is a poker buddy of Mike's character, and so I'm there as kind of a frenemy of his. He comes back to his old hometown, and I'm one of the poker buddies that happens to be in on a couple of his games, and one of the climax scenes of at least his poker playing happens when I'm at the table, and it's the whole film is kind of a funny, sad, look at this man who is coming back to his hometown, who's coming back to his family, and all the complications and all the messiness that goes along with that. So I'm just happy to play a part in all of that.
What do you think audiences will get out of the film?
Well, I think that, at its core, this film is about family, and it's about the messiness of family. It's about how family can be a salve for you, even if you know it or not, right? It's all about coming back home and dealing with all these things that have happened throughout one's life. And how can you find belonging and how can you find comfort in these things that you might not have necessarily thought would bring you comfort? And of course, it's a funny film as well, and so I think people will really enjoy the comedy in it, as you know, too.
How does it feel going to see it with an audience right now?
It feels so special going to see this with an audience right now. We filmed this almost a year and a half ago in upstate New York. So the fact that it's premiering, the U.S. premiere is at Tribeca in my hometown. And just to have the whole cast and the producers together like this, it feels super special. I'm so happy to be here.
It looks like a great script. Is that what drew you to the project?
I've worked with Dustin previously on a film, and I love his writing. I love the way he works with actors. He's a very, very thoughtful director, and and the material is very unusual. It's very human, very real, very unusual, very mysterious kind of writing, and it was just very something I found to be very rich and intriguing.
What do you feel like this is going to do for people? Like, what kind of impact will it have on the audience?
I think and I hope that it'll be, you know, an emotional experience for people. For me, it's personally, I find it to be an emotional movie. I can't even say why. It just sort of works you in a way slowly where, I mean, it's about sibling relationships and the way that they change. And that's sort of an unusual theme, you know, not many movies are about that, but it's very universal, prevalent kind of topic and feeling that people, I think, can relate to. So I hope it hits for people on that level.
And I know you're no stranger to red carpets and things like that, but how does it feel to be here at Tribeca about to go see this thing in the theater with an audience?
It feels great. I mean, I'm very curious to see how the movie does tonight with this audience. Well, yeah, you know, we were with the movie in Berlin in February, and it screened there, and it was a really good screening, but I'm kind of curious how it'll be different tonight here, like, in New York and with an American audience, like, if the response will be similar or different.
Next up, we've got a couple of documentaries for you. The first is The League, a new documentary about the Negro baseball leagues. We were on the red carpet to speak to producer Nina Dobrev and director Sam Pollard.
I partnered with Questlove, I don't know even how maybe 5 years ago, maybe more. Originally, we wanted to make this into a feature film, and then we decided to make it into a documentary because we wanted to celebrate the history of the Negro Baseball League and how much progress and how much they've, you know, paved the way for the progress that has happened, but at the same time, highlighting how much more we have to do in the future.
Great. And is there a feature film follow-up?
Potentially, but not anything I can talk about quite yet. But maybe someday.
What was the genesis of this movie? Kind of what was the origin story?
Byron Motley, who's to my right, his father was a Negro League umpire. They wrote a book, and he had done a lot of interviews with former Negro League players. And it was a great story to be told. And so he had came to us in Radical and to Questlove and said, I really want this to be a film. And we made it happen.
For people who don't know, can you give us a little background on the Negro League?
Well, the Negro Leagues were started in the early 20th century, initiated by a gentleman named Rube Foster, who put together a lot of Negro League teams from around the country. And they were fantastic ball players. There were people like Satchel Paige and Buck Leonard and Buck O'Neill and Cool Papa Bell and Josh Gibson. These were all great ball players who, you know, if America wasn't so segregated, they would have been major league baseball players. But they left a legacy with people like Jackie Robinson and Monty Irvin and Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, who all played in the Negro Leagues before they went to the major leagues.
So is there anybody that you could get that still alive who played in the leagues? Or?
Well, luckily, fortunately, Byron had shot all these interviews with former players. So we were able to have access to all that material, you know. And then we interviewed a bunch of historians who are Negro League aficionados. They love the Negro Leagues. So they were able to give us, you know, the stories and to dig into the stories even more.
I don't know if the movie delves into this, but a lot of people say that a lot of major league records should have asterisks next to them.
Well, you know, there's new analytics now that the Hall of Fame is taking real consideration into, you know, the stats of Negro League ballplayers.
Do you see this as a sports movie? Do you see it as a historical movie?
I see it as both, and I see it as a human movie, a human story, which is always the important thing for me as a documentary filmmaker. Not just to say it's a sports film, you know, not just say it's a historical film, that it's a story that's, you know, covers all those things, but also very human, very complicated.
What do you want audiences to take away from this film?
I want audiences to understand, again, that the African-American experience is a part of the American experience, and you should always remember that. This country was not made just by George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, though.
All right, so if you were alive in the 90s, you probably remember Milli Vanilli, the Grammy Award-winning duo that became the center of an infamous scandal when it was found out that they didn't actually sing the songs on their album. Now, 30 years later, the real story has come to light in a new documentary called Milli Vanilli, which has been picked up by Paramount Plus and is set to stream on that network later this year. Here's the director Luke Corum and former Milli Vanilli member Fab Morvan on the red carpet.
Why this movie? Why now? I wanted to tell a story of Milli Vanilli, the story that people didn't know, the human story. And I think, having done documentaries for quite some time now, I think that in order to tell a personal story like this, it takes time. And you got to be removed from when everything occurred. And so 30 years later, people were willing to sit down with us, record executives, the real singers, Fab, you know, and open up in a way that hadn't before. And I think for me, that's why it took so long to tell the story. And for Fab, why he told it now, you can ask him.
Well, you know, so it's all about timing, really. And Luke came in my life and sat down with me. We talked about the project. And I felt like of all the people that had approached me before, he was going to be the one. Because he was genuine in his approach. He really wanted to tell the story. And that's what made me happy about finding someone that was willing to tell the story, but also had the sensitivity. Because when you talk to people, you vibe people out. And, you know, I'm 56 years old now, so I think I can feel people pretty fast. And, you know, he was the one.
How did you approach it? Did you approach him? Did he approach you? How did that happen?
I sought Fab out. I saw a video of him on YouTube at the Moth in New York City, actually. And at the end, he sang, and he had this beautiful voice. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I thought he wasn't supposed to... I thought he couldn't sing, you know? And that kind of spun the wheels up. And then I got a hold of Fab. Took about 8 months to a year process. To really get to know each other. And then when we did the interview, it was a three-day interview, and it was very emotional for him.
But the one thing that really made up my mind, like the little icing on the cake, is the documentary that Luke did. It was The Blind Magician. I don't know if you... It's the right title?
Yeah, Delt.
And you have to see this thing, because when I saw that, I was like, wow, man, he's good. He's good, because it was all in the detail, it was emotional, it was subtle, and I had never seen anything like that.
So when you were going through this process, I mean, was it nostalgic? Was it painful? Was it...
Therapeutic. I mean, it was very therapeutic for me, because I remember feeling very, extremely tired the week after we did about 5 days of interviews, like, you know, like 7 hours a day. And the week after, I felt so good, and then they came back later on, and I was like, oh, I feel really good. Like, I think... It was very necessary for me to go through this process and therapeutic, and it has a lot to do with healing. And now I can look at the story objectively with distance, and it doesn't hurt anymore. I don't take it personally anymore.
What are we going to learn that we didn't already know? And well, for people who are alive...
You'll see that tonight.
Buckle up, baby.
Buckle up, yes.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
The new Disney Pixar film Elemental screened at Tribeca just before opening in theaters on June 16th. I had the chance to speak with one of the stars of the film, the voice of Cinder Lumen. Here's my interview with Sheila Omi. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you, Jason. Great to be here.
Well, thanks for doing this. I know you're doing a bunch of these today. I'm always grateful to be part of anyone's junket. I want to talk to you about Elemental, obviously, but I want to talk to you a bit about you first. So how did you get started in show business and acting? What's your origin story?
So I am the child of immigrants, and I'm an immigrant myself. I was born in Iran, and we moved to the States when I was 10 years old. And when I was 15, I happened to see a play at my high school. It was Van Nuys High School. It was a performing arts magnet, and I was stunned and amazed by the incredible 18-year-old actors and actresses that were on stage before me. And that's when this is all I wanted to do. And all I thought was ever possible for me to do was theater. So I started with being the prop mistress and then getting parts in musicals and parts in plays. I ended up playing in my senior year, The Crucible. I played Elizabeth Proctor. So I worked my way up from being a prop mistress. And Then cut to, it was years. I went to UCLA as a biological anthropology major. I was going to go into medical school to make my dad happy. We immigrants do that. And it wasn't until my dad passed away in 1998 that I decided to follow my dreams of acting, which again to me was theater. And being Iranian, I started doing plays globally for the Iranian diaspora all over the world. Couldn't go back to Iran, but and that's how I got started. And it's only relatively recent. It's only a few years that I've been doing film and television.
I want to talk to you about Elemental. So, and we'll get into the whole Pixar experience. But first of all, tell us about the film, because it's a bit unusual from the normal Pixar stock. But like, tell us a little bit about the film. Give me a little look at the world, and then talk about the character you play.
So Elemental, it's an all new original feature film, and it's set in Element City, where fire, water, land, and air residents all live together. And so the story follows this young 20-something-year-old woman named Ember. She's a fire character, so she's tough, quick-witted, and she's the child of immigrants, because although all the residents of Element City are immigrants, the fire are immigrants that came latest. They came last. So they have a bit of a harder time fitting in and living in the city. And so you know, being an immigrant, she's fiercely loyal to her family, and she's keenly aware of the sacrifices that her mother and father, I play her mom, Cinder Lumen, her mom and dad made to give her a better life. And so she meets Wade, this water guy, and there's a very unlikely kind of friendship that happens between these two people. And this friendship causes her to start rethinking life, rethinking how she feels about Element City, as well as rethinking herself and what's important to her as a person, as opposed to a daughter of immigrants.
It causes some steam, I would imagine.
It's very good, and it's full of puns. Good job.
Give me like a little backstory. Like, tell me a little story about like how you got the role. Tell me about the Pixar experience. I've heard different things about people who do voices there. Just give me a little background on that.
I feel so honored. So honored. I don't even know what other word I could use than that. And surprised that Peter Son, who is the creator of this beautiful film, he's the director, and he co-wrote it, and it's based on his own story, a very personal story, because he's also a son of immigrants, Korean immigrants. So he came to me, and to this day I'm stunned that I had such a great blessing happened for me. And he asked me to play, that the character of Cinder is actually loosely based on his mom, his Korean mom. So that was another just incredible honor for me to do, because I really wanted to do her justice, her beautiful soul, may she rest in peace, and to make the character as real as possible and not cartoony. But also there was another challenge, and that was that the people, these fire people speak a different language, and we had a brilliant linguist create a language for us. It's called Fire-ish. And so Peter and I were collaborating on, okay, so if someone is raised, born and raised speaking this language, when they speak English, how does that sound? So that was, you know, some hours went into that, and it was such a pleasure working with him. Peter and Denise Rehm, his producer, they're just so lovely and such masters at their craft. But they're like, when I look at Peter, he's like, everything that's good about humanity is in one person. It's just such a pleasure to work with him.
How do you approach a voice character as opposed to, you know, a character that you're going to play on camera? And are you guys all recording together? Like, are you there as an ensemble, or is everybody just kind of doing their own thing by themselves?
So the common denominator is Peter, as the, because he's directing this. For that reason, I haven't even met the other actors yet. So we would come in on different days, but Peter would guide us because he knows exactly what he's looking for, and he knows the energy of where he needs the energy to go. So he guides us and he directs us so that in the end, it looks like a, not just a unified piece, but it looks like these characters are actually speaking with each other. And that speaks to Peter's brilliance as a director. It's very much like approaching a full, you know, being in front of the camera. The only difference is, and this is what I love so much about doing voiceover work, is that, you know how in front of a camera, you have to have a certain degree of stillness. As a voice character, you can just really get into it, and it actually helps to get into it and to have these big expressions to get your voice to express in a different way than you would as a on camera.
But I imagine, you know, coming from the theater is a blessing in that type of thing, because, you know, in theater, the audience is so far away, you have to be big. Like, you can't, you know, everything about film acting is so small now.
Yeah.
And naturalistic.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. Totally. And that's, for me, that's the challenge of film acting, is to make it strong, to make it small. So many times to my film directors, they're like, Sheila, what are you doing? You bring it down. And I'm like, I'm acting for the last row. You know? Yeah, so that's, it's, and I'm still learning film. I'm still learning film acting. And to make it small, but to make it compelling, it's not easy.
Was it for you coming, especially coming from theater, was it weird not having the other people there to play off of and not, because, I mean, acting is all about chemistry, right? So, like, is it, if you're just kind of acting and the director's saying, do this, do that, does it ever take you out of it kind of thing?
No, it doesn't take me out of it because I'll tell you, as you probably know, for us actors, the majority of our acting life is doing auditions and there's nobody there. So we have to, as actors, we have to have a really good imagination. So that wasn't a problem for me at all. And a lot of times, even when actors are there, they're hiding behind the camera. You can barely see an eye, or sometimes you're acting to a dot, you know, somewhere around the camera. So that's what actors do. You have to imagine that the other person's there.
I got to wrap up, but for audiences out there who want to check this film out, what can they expect? What are audiences going to get out of this picture?
It is a stunning film. It is a stunning film. It's funny. It's fun. Visually incredible. Audio. It is an audio journey. The music is incredible. You feel like you're doing an incredible sound meditation. And it's coming out June 16th. I suggest, if you can, please see it in the theater. It's made for that. It's an experience, and it's fun, and it's funny. It's really funny.
Is it going to make me cry? Tell me now.
Yes, it's going to make you cry, but it's going to make you laugh, and it's going to make you laugh through your tears, I promise.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
All right, that's all we got for you today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including more film festival coverage, visit our website, NoRestForTheWeekendPodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. I'd like to thank Sheila Omi and everyone who came out to talk to us at Tribeca, and a big shout out and thanks to all of our sponsors, New York Women in Film and Television, Black Magic Design, JMR Rentals, and NYC Webfest. For Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.